Hello and welcome to another episode of Meenal's World. This week I have the lovely Gurinder with me. Gurinder is a life coach and she went through this path after her own journey of miscarriage. And today we talk about the journey she went through. She had to go through 7 miscarriages. She talks about finally having her child with her, Simran, who's now 2 years old, and she just dropped her off to nursery and she came to join me today. Gurinder's story is very touching, it's very moving, and it's a huge inspiration to other women in our community and to myself as well, to speak up and to talk about what we're going through, not just through pregnancy, after pregnancy, and throughout your life as well. So this episode will definitely bring a tear to your eye. It got me going, it got Gurinder going, it even got our video guy going. So have a box of tissues ready and a cup of tea, and I'm really sure you're going to enjoy this episode. Gurinder, thank you for coming down today.
Absolute pleasure.
I know you've been busy with Simran and everything else that's been going on, but thank you for coming down, Gurinder. I really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. How are you doing? New mum.
I'm okay, actually. I managed to put some red lipstick on today, so that's something that's nice to do, and put some makeup on and actually just be human again, because I haven't done this in so long, you know, just sitting down with someone, having conversation, and actually meeting people. I think that's so important after pregnancy, that you just get locked down into your room of feeding and changing nappies and looking after the little one, that you forget about yourself. So, and thank you for asking, Gurinder, because no one usually asks that question. Everyone's like, how's the little one? And then I'm just like waiting for the next question. How are you? But yeah, we're okay, Gurinder. Thank you.
Now, how is the little
one? Yeah, she's great. She's lovely. She's getting into a better routine now. And she's getting more cuddly as well. Like getting chubby. So, you know, like initially when I tried to lift her, I was scared I'd break her because she was so tiny when she was born. But now she's much more cuddly. And like even when we go to bed, I can actually cuddle her and feel like it's safe to do it now.
I can't wait for a cuddle later, if that's okay.
Free cuddles in this house, Gurinder. I should put a sign outside saying free cuddles. But Gurinder, I actually started following you on Instagram. I think it was through a friend of mine who passed on your profile and said, you know, this is someone you need to speak to. And I looked through your posts and I went through your blog as well. And I realized there's so much more to pregnancy than what I went through. And I think that's what really caught my attention, because I'll be very honest, I was in my own bubble when I was pregnant. And I don't blame women who go through that, because I mean, that's what it is, right? You have to take care of yourself and that's all you're going to think about.
Absolutely.
And I genuinely thought those 9 months for me, they were tough. But there are so many other stories around pregnancy that we don't talk about. I felt that throughout my 9 months, it would be like all rosy and bubbly. Everyone would take care of the pregnant lady and everyone would like pamper me. And obviously that didn't happen because of COVID.
But then I had that to contend with as well.
But then when I went through your story, I started to think, well, my story is just like a small thread compared to, you know, it's a small like straw in a massive stack of hay that we don't talk about. And your story, I mean, it brings tears to my eyes, because I can't imagine going through something like that, especially for someone like me, like going through my own family and being raised in a house where the love for children is so great. You know, we just want to have kids. And so what was your childhood like in terms of thinking about your family? Because as a girl, as a young little princess, you're like, oh, I want to have this many kids. I want to have this family.
Yeah.
Is that what you had in mind as well?
I did. Yeah. So I am one of 4. So we're sisters. Four sisters. And I always thought I would like a big family, because I had experienced it and I know what it felt like to have, you know, if you have a tiff with one sister, you've got another sister to talk to. So I always thought, oh, I'd love to have like 3 or 4 children as well, just because it felt really nice being part of.
And I guess in some part of you just thought it would be as easy as saying, I want 4 kids, or I want 7 kids, or whatever, you know, like I'm sure the whole idea of having children was so far-fetched from what you actually went through.
Yeah, I thought it would just be something that happened. You do all of the normal things that you do in the sequence of life. You study, you get you get a degree, you get a job, you get married, you have children. It just felt like it was that simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then all of those things did happen for me.
Mm-hmm.
We just got stuck at the having children bit.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have written what was going to happen for me.
Yeah. It
just kept going. The story just kept going.
Yeah.
So yeah, I couldn't have written my route to motherhood.
No. I don't think anybody can, Gurinder. Mm. I remember speaking to Karina. Yeah. She was on my podcast as well. I mean, she went through cancer treatment. She had to freeze her eggs. And she spoke about how her embryos were lost. And I mean, these stories are so important because so many women go through this, but they feel they cannot speak up.
Yeah.
And I've started to speak up about my experiences postpartum. Mm. It hasn't been easy. But I still feel like it's a bubble that's still a bit bigger than that of miscarriages or what you went through, for example. But Gurinda, let's just take me back to a few years ago. So you got married,
mm-hmm.
and then you plan to have children.
Yeah.
And then what happened from there?
So we got pregnant relatively easily.
Yeah.
And I remember the joy of the pregnancy test because it was like, oh my gosh, we wanted this.
Yeah.
And there's it's the happened. Lines. Yeah. And oh my God, it's we started on that that part of our lives.
Yeah.
And not long after I'd done that pregnancy test, I was due to go up north with work. So I was going to spend a few days with my team up in Preston. And I thought, okay, I've got to just be extra careful because I'm going to be on the train and all of this. And I got up north. I had a day in the office and I just felt something wasn't right. And I just thought something's not feeling good. I'm getting these pains. And
how many weeks into your pregnancy were you?
Probably technically 6 or 7 weeks.
So had you told anybody at this point?
No.
Or, so you hadn't told anybody that you were pregnant? It was between you and your husband?
Me and my husband. We had that excitement between us.
Yeah.
And then, it was mind-boggling what was happening because I just didn't understand what was going on. I didn't know if these pains that I was feeling were normal pregnancy pains.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what it felt like to be pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought, oh, maybe it's just normal and it's the pregnancy, like properly implanting. That's me on Google.
Yeah.
And I remember having to cut my work day short that day because I was just feeling immense pain. And I kept going to the toilet and I thought, what is going on? It felt like really crampy period pains. And I just had to say, I'm going to go back to the hotel because I'm not feeling great. And a colleague came back to the hotel. He was staying in the same hotel and he said, I'll come back with you. And I don't remember a single thing we spoke about in that car taxi journey because I was just in pain. And I was like, I'm confused.
Did
I don't know what's happening.
Did you ever think that it would be a miscarriage?
No, I didn't. No part of my brain took me down that route.
You know, Gurinder, we had a pleasant pregnancy, I would say. And every time I felt unwell, every time I felt sick, your mind, because you want to be so positive about everything, you wouldn't even think about that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you probably just thought it was, well, you know, something I can fix or something that we can just
absolutely
get on with.
I can go back to the hotel. I can have an easy night. I can just go to bed. I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
And that's completely what I thought until I stepped out of this taxi and I just bled uncontrollably. But I still thought, I'm going to be okay, because you don't want to not be pregnant. And I remember getting through that night somehow.
Wait, hold on. You got out of the taxi.
Yeah.
And then what did you do? Did you like call your husband to tell him this happened? Or
I said that I still had my colleague with me and I thought, I just wish he'd stop talking because I just want to get into I just want to get to my room.
Yeah.
And I remember getting into the lift and he went to a different floor. And when I looked in the mirror and I could just see, you know, blood on my trousers. And I just thought, what is going on? And I literally got into my hotel room and was on Google, like, is it normal to bleed in pregnancy? And you know how you get some advice saying, actually, yes, some women bleed in pregnancy. Yep. Some women bleed throughout pregnancy and everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, yes, there were other threads saying actually proper blood in pregnancy, you need to get it checked out. But I just kept being drawn to the ones that said, oh, it's normal and it's likely to be fine, because I wanted it to be fine. Yeah. And I remember going to bed that night. I don't think I slept very well, but something in me around 2 or 3 in the morning said, you can't go into work today. So into this office that I was, I had to be in, go and get checked out. Just go to the hospital, just get checked out and let them tell you it's fine. And then you can carry on with your day. Yeah. You can go into work. I was due to take the train home again that day. And then I literally called a taxi, 3 in the morning, got into hospital. And the guy that I saw out of hours person in the hospital, I remember him saying the exact same words that I'd read on Google. And he said, oh, this can be really normal. Lots of women just bleed, so yeah, it could be fine. And again, that's reassuring. But then I think he sensed my fear, because I said, so am I okay to get the train home this evening? Will I be okay? And I think he looked at me and thought, this poor girl, let me just get her checked out. Yeah. So he sent me off to the maternity gynae ward. And I was emotional by this point, because I just felt like I don't know what's going on.
Did your husband know at this point still?
I told him, yes. So I had told him in the hotel room. I'd said, I'm not feeling too good, but I'm just going to take it easy. And I'm sure he was probably sat there on Google too, like checking, is this okay? But I told him not to come. I said, it's a hefty drive for you. I'm sure it's going to be fine. And I did tell him that morning. I said, maybe you should, you know, just come anyway, because I probably shouldn't get the train back home. And while I was in the hospital and they did some blood tests and checked me out, they didn't let me go back to the hotel room. So they knew the situation. They knew that I was away from home. I didn't have anybody with me. So they just said, just wait in this, you know, lounge in the in the ward, which I thought was really nice. They made me tea, they made me toast, and I was watching these women come in and out. And I remember just being a bit of a mess, and I just kept crying. The emotion was just there.
But were you crying because you were scared? Were you anxious, or was it just the hormones?
I think it was just hormones. It was just I was overcome with this emotion that was just coming from nowhere.
Yeah.
But there was also probably a tiny piece of me feeling that maybe this is not going well.
Yeah, because sometimes when you think that something might be going wrong, your brain puts like a block.
Yeah.
And you only get to that point of thinking something might be wrong, but you will never think beyond that.
Yeah.
And I've been through that as well myself, that you don't want to pass that barrier and think of what could go wrong from there. So you probably just put that barrier there.
I think the barrier was there mentally, because it was like, I'm sure it's going to be okay, but it might be wrong, I don't know. But I couldn't put that barrier on the emotion. The emotion was just there and it was flowing.
Yeah.
And every time I'd get myself sorted and think, okay, no, come on, you're okay. There's a lady just walked into the room, just be okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't help it. The emotion was just coming.
Yeah.
So eventually they got the test results back and they asked me, is your husband on his way? I said, yep. And then they said, I'm really sorry, but you have miscarried. So my HCG numbers and things had just dropped. And I remember just, I don't know, just feeling completely, I don't even have the words. Yeah. I just felt so lost and I didn't know what to do. And I thought, gosh, how's this happened to me? I don't know anyone else who's had a miscarriage. Like, have I done anything? Yeah. Is it because I came on this trip? And I remember my husband hadn't quite got to the hotel yet.
Okay.
And I didn't want to tell him. I thought, he's still driving. I want him to be safe. And so I just called a taxi and took myself to the hotel. And I remember messaging a friend and she kept trying to call me. And I kept hanging up because I thought, I don't know how to talk to you because I don't know what to say, because I don't know what's going on. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I just want to cry. So I just kept messaging her. And I needed that before my husband got there. I needed to just kind of let it out to somebody. And then I just rested until he arrived. And then broke the news to him. Mm-hmm. And then he needed a minute. He said, I'm just going to go and get some stuff from the car. and he went for a walk and he needed to just register what had happened. And I respected that.
Yeah.
And then we started the journey of figuring out how do you come back from this?
Yeah.
And what do you do?
Mm.
And it was tough.
Yeah. And anyone in your family experienced a miscarriage before or?
No. And I think that was hard because...
Is it a no or is it not that you know of?
I didn't know of anybody at the time.
Okay.
And since I have heard of somebody, yeah.
So then once that news came to you that you've miscarried, everything that you dreamed of to have your child, whether it was a boy or girl, you thought... This is the nursery I'll set up. This is the space in the house for them.
Yeah.
All of that had to be pushed to the side.
Yeah.
And you had to start figuring out how to get over this. What did you do?
Oh.
And where do you even start, Gurinder? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because when you go through something so deep, you're lost. And to find a starting point to say, okay, this is going to be the start of my healing journey.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing to do by yourself. And sometimes the thing is you have to do it by yourself, I feel.
Mm.
The journey towards being healed and sort of closure has to start from within.
Mm.
Nobody can really help you sometimes because it's such a personal thing.
Yeah.
So how did you go about this?
So I agree on that journey is an inward journey. But at the start of it, I think you need some guidance.
Yeah,
you
exactly,
need
yeah.
something to say, this is what has happened. For me as well, I am quite practical. I like facts. I like to understand what is going on, what has happened. So I did do the research and it was a 1 in 4...
Yeah.
Pregnancies ended miscarriage, and I thought, oh, okay, so I get that a little bit now. So the chances after that of going on to have a successful pregnancy, they're really high. So okay, right, reassurance, it's going to be all right next time. So I needed that to just kind of put a sense check on it, that actually it's not that there's something wrong with me or that I've done something wrong. It's one of these things that happen and it's really common.
Yeah.
But next time it might be okay. So I needed that to just stabilize my mind.
Did you blame yourself when this happened?
I don't. I think the thought came in.
Yeah.
Is it because I carried that heavy bag up the stairs
because
I was rushing on the train? But then reading stuff on Google, this is not the cause of miscarriage.
Yeah.
And I believed those facts that I was reading. Miscarriages don't happen because of the hot shower that you took and you carried that bag or you sat on a train for this long. Those are not causes of miscarriage.
Yeah.
And that was good for me because when those thoughts would come in, it's like I could categorically say, no, I haven't done anything that has caused this to happen. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, I could shift out of that quite quickly. But I know lots of people who stay in that space of blaming themselves, or people are blaming them.
Yeah.
It's because you did this, it's because you were stressed, and it's just not true.
Once you went through this process with your husband, because I mean, I'm talking about you as a woman going through miscarriage, but also your husband had to process this as well.
How did it affect
your relationship in any way at all? Because the whole process of pregnancy itself can impact a relationship or couple's relationship in different ways, because as a woman you're going through so much and sometimes you can't explain how you're feeling and what, and you know, it brings out that frustration and then the husband has to try and understand what's going on, the whole dynamic changes. But this is a, you know, this is something that you, this is a time where you both really needed each other to heal together as well.
Yeah.
Now, how did your husband sort of manage this news?
He felt that shock with that first miscarriage. And he, like I said, he needed that time to have a walk around the block to clear his mind. And then when we came back together, I'm sure we just cried together. And what I found happened after that is we kind of went like this. So there were some days where I needed support and I was feeling an emotional wreck and I couldn't make sense of things. And on those days, he was doing all right. So he could prop me up.
Yeah.
And then I'd be okay because I'd have that support. But then a couple of days later, it would completely flip and it would be the other way around. And what I found interesting was sometimes he wouldn't always volunteer how he was feeling, but I knew he was feeling something. Mm. So I'd probe and say, are you okay? You seem a bit quiet today or whatever. And then he'd say, yeah, I'm not feeling that great, but I don't want to share it with you because you're having a good day. And I'd say, no, you have to, because, you know, that's how this works. Like, we have to pick each other up. So then he would share. But he always had that little bit of reluctance that, you know, she's had a couple of bad days and now she's had a couple of really good days. I don't want to bring her back down.
Yeah.
But it just so happened that we just
did this. You were like yin and yang.
Yeah. So just kidding. And I'm so, like, grateful for that, because we just got through it the best way we could by seeing each other, by hearing each other and being what the other person needed when they were feeling a bit
shit. How old were you at this
point?
My
first miscarriage was just before I turned 30.
Just before you turned 30.
Yeah.
And then to have that miscarriage and then to say, okay, we're going to try again.
Mm.
Obviously, you still have that fear that, well, this has happened once. Don't want it to happen again.
Yeah.
But then also, you have to be ready emotionally to go through a pregnancy. So how long did you wait till you tried again?
A good few months, I'd say.
Good few months,
So what you say about the fear being there, the fear was there, but actually I was going on the stats, like the statistics say this happens to 1 in 4, but then next time round your chances are great.
Yeah.
So I was holding on to that. The fear wasn't quite setting in. I was cautious, obviously, when I got those lines on the pregnancy test, and I thought, like, let's just take one day at a time and see what happens. But I had that thing in me that actually it's going to be all right. And then when that I lost the second pregnancy, then it was like, okay, what's going on?
And at how many weeks did you lose a second?
Similar. Same. So 6, 7, 8 weeks.
And was it a bleed again?
Yeah, I think that second one
was a bleed.
Yeah.
And then you had your second miscarriage a few months later.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that second hit?
So now it's kind of going into unfamiliar territory, because I'm like, the statistics said this, but that's not what happened to us. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah.
Then you look into the statistics around, okay, after you've had two miscarriages, what might happen in the third? Or why can't they test me? Like, can't they see if there's something wrong?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just confusing. It was confusing because I couldn't get any testing done to see if there was something underlying until I'd had three consecutive miscarriages.
So the third one happened when? A few months later again?
I'd say so. Yeah. So,
and the same, like 6, 7 weeks or?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had three miscarriages in the space of how many months?
I wish I'd brought my journal.
Oh, no, I know,
I would say probably in the space of a year.
A year.
Yeah.
So I know this might sound like a silly question, but why did you want to have a child? Like, why did you want to bring a child into your marriage? What was the reason to just keep going and say, okay, I've had a miscarriage, it's fine, let's try again. I had another one, let's try again.
Yeah.
Because at some point people will be like, okay, you know what? Yeah. Let's put it aside. We're happy as a couple.
Yeah.
But you wanted to keep going, keep trying. Yeah. Why was that feeling there?
I wanted to be a mum. I'm quite maternal as it is. I love children. I have this bond with children. So any friends and family that have children, it's like I can communicate on their level. Yeah. And it's like I've got that love. I had that love to give to a child. Yeah. And I couldn't imagine my life without a child.
And did your husband have that feeling as well? He really wanted to have children as well? Or was he just okay with sort of moving on as just you two?
I think he did want children. But I would say my desire was probably stronger.
Yeah.
And if I'd have said, I can't do this anymore, this is too much, and it's really taking its toll on me, I don't want to do it. I'm sure he'd have said, okay, that's fine. We're going to be okay, and it's fine. Yeah. And we can look at other options.
Yeah.
But yeah, the desire to be a mum is what was just there to just keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say there was also a bit of pressure also.
You would say that?
Yeah.
From
family and the, you know, going to weddings and to functions and aunties saying, oh, how long have you been married? Yeah. You're not going to have children. Come on, you need to hurry up. And so there was always that in the back of my mind as well, yeah. that there's a pressure. I'm expected to have children.
Yeah, that's the next step of marriage.
That's the next step of life.
Because you were talking about before how you expected life to just be, you go through uni, study and yeah. get married. And now you were sort of stuck.
Yeah.
Because the next step that you thought would happen
yeah.
wasn't happening.
And I didn't know what life beyond looked like
yeah.
without the child, because that's what my...
That's the narrative you've had.
That's the narrative I've had all my life.
Yeah. But when you went through three miscarriages, Gurinder, I mean, I'm sure you had your days where you were sad mm. and, you know, you must have had days where you struggled. Mm. Of course, your husband was there. But what about your family, like your sisters and your mother, especially like the females in your family? How did their support help you? Because it's something that we don't talk about yeah. at all in our communities. And it was only yesterday when I spoke to my mom, because my mom was saying, oh, who's coming around tomorrow? And I showed her your story. And yesterday I found out a few of my aunts had miscarriages. And I didn't know about that.
Mm.
And I just wonder that if you know, if they went through all of that by themselves, mm. how much help they could have had if they spoke up.
Yeah.
So what was it like with you?
So it's interesting because after that first miscarriage, I remember saying to my husband, I don't want to tell mum and dad and my sisters, like, why did they've got their own things going on. My oldest sister had recently had a little boy.
Okay.
And I thought, I don't need to put this on them.
Yeah.
And my dad is, me and my dad were like that. And emotionally, like he would know when something was wrong with me. And I thought, I can't give him this pain
yeah.
to hold.
Yeah.
So if I'm keeping it from dad, I have to keep it from everybody yeah. else, because we're such an open family that yeah. if I told my sister or my mom, it would be in yeah, the family.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it was my husband who said, I think we should tell your mom and dad, because, you know, we're all the way up here in Preston. Yeah. We need to get to London.
Yeah.
It's a long drive for you to take, and anything could happen on the way, because I was losing a lot of blood. So he said, why don't we just tell your parents? We'll make a stop over their house yeah. for the night, and you can get some care and mum can cook you some food yeah. and all of that. Part of me was like, oh, I don't want to, but I just went with it. And I said, okay, fine, let's do mm. that. And you tell them, because I don't know how to have this conversation.
Yeah.
So somehow I made him have that conversation. Yeah. And it was hard because none of them knew that I was pregnant, because it was quite early on.
Yeah.
And on the drive to my mum and dad's, I remember my sister with the little boy. He was at my mum and dad's house. And I thought, oh my God, how am I going to be with a baby?
Yeah.
Like, what is, I don't know if I can do it. And I think I might have messaged my sister to say, if I'm a bit weird with the little one, like, don't worry. It's just, I don't know what's going to come up. And she said, that's fine. And actually, my nephew, I remember I wanted to pick him up and I wanted to hold him. And I remember him just looking at me as, you know, really inquisitively. He's only a couple of months old. I feel emotional.
Sorry.
And I didn't bring my tissues. When I looked at my nephew, and he just looked at me, and he just had these beautiful, reassuring eyes. And instantly I thought, I'm so connected to you. And he helped heal a bit of what I was feeling, actually. And so that feeling of, am I going to be okay with a baby so soon after miscarrying, it just melted, because I found healing in just holding my nephew. Mm. And I think my sisters trod very gently around me that day, because they didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to say. But I just felt cared for.
Yeah.
And it was just nice being at
home.
It's
like an unspoken
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was nice. I'm glad that my husband insisted that we do that, because it meant that they knew
yeah.
that, you know, we wanted a family and we were trying and we had a baby and we've lost it. And they knew that we were on this journey.
Yeah.
So the rest, so the next two miscarriages, I can't actually remember if I did tell my parents or my sisters. And every time the thought came, do I share it with them? It was, I would always say, no, it's okay, because I didn't want to put this on my dad, because he was such an empath and because we were so connected, he would have just felt my pain. So I would be the one to talk my husband out of it, which is bizarre, because usually it'd be the other way around, I suspect. And whenever we did choose to share, it was my husband. I made it him have the conversation.
You just put him in there.
Like, if you want to share it, you do it. And it,
and what was it? I mean, you talk a lot about your father, Gurinder, and I can see he played a big role in your life. What was it like to tell him this news, because you didn't want him to go through that pain? How did you make him part of your story, as opposed to...
Oh, I wish I could answer this question differently. But I felt I didn't want to make him part of the story, because I knew he'd hurt.
Yeah. Sorry, Green.
Don't be sorry.
Because I understand what you mean, Gurinder. I mean, I had Radhika 9 weeks ago, and it was tough. I mean, there are days where I sat down breastfeeding and I'd cry, and I said, I can't do this. And I turned to my mom, and I had to, because I had nobody else, but I didn't want to pass my pain on to my mom, because I knew that she'd be in pain.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to do that. And you talk about holding your nephew and seeing his smile. Radhika now is starting to smile and be more social. There are days when it's tough and I look at her smile and that smile changes everything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want my mom to know what I'm going through, because when she calls me and she can see that I'm struggling, sometimes for her it's better to know what's going on.
Yeah.
So she's assured in that way, rather than just worrying, what's wrong, what's wrong?
Yeah.
So I understand what you mean with trying to find the balance of protecting your father, but also making him part of.
Yeah, and I don't think I found the way the balance, in that. Yeah. No.
But I don't think anybody ever can.
Yeah, and you don't know, because I just thought I want to shield him from stuff. And also kind of growing up, I'm the strong one. I'm the one that people lean on, and friends, family, if they need support with anything, or they need advice, or someone to help them get through something, they lean on me. And I love that, because that's who I am. But then, shoe on the other foot, it was like, I don't know who I should be leaning on, because I've dealt with stuff myself and I'll be okay. And it was that kind of, come on, you can do it. You be your own support.
Yeah.
And I rode that for quite a while. But probably a part of me wishes I'd have just let my guard down a little bit sooner and just said, I'm going through a crappy time, everyone. And this is what I need.
Yeah.
But I just kept being like, no, I'm going to be all right. And I kept putting those
barriers,
walls up. Yeah.
So you said earlier, Gurinder, that you had the third miscarriage. And then was it then that you found out what was going on? As in why your pregnancies were not getting past that stage?
Yeah. So then when you have three consecutive miscarriages, that's when you can be referred to have testing.
Yeah.
And I was referred to a recurrent miscarriage clinic. And they did loads of tests. And there's me thinking, okay, they're going to just do all these tests and I'm going to get the answer, and it's going to say, this thing is not quite right and this is the medicine to fix it. Off you go. You're going to be fine. That's what I was expecting. And I had all the tests done and they came back and it was like, yeah, that's normal. That's normal. That's normal. That's normal. That's normal. And everything was normal. And I just thought, so what is going on? I wanted the answer. Yeah. I wanted there to be a problem so that medicine could fix it. And that probably sounds bizarre, but I just needed an answer. I needed to know why this was happening. And the only thing that was detected was that everyone's blood clots more in pregnancy, but mine was clotting a lot more than it
usually is normal. Does. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was advised to take baby aspirin in a following pregnancy. And I thought, okay, that's something. I can cling on to that and that's going to be the solution. And then I got pregnant again, fourth time now. And I started taking the aspirin. I did everything as I was told. And I got furthest in that pregnancy. I got quite far in that pregnancy, actually. We had some scans. I'd had a heartbeat.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that for you must have been so amazing, right? Let's hold on to that for a second, because you went through the first three pregnancies and you couldn't even sort of see what was there, because I'm sure, did you have a first scan after those?
I think in one of them I did when I was struggling, or I thought something wasn't right, so they did a scan
to check. But to hear a heartbeat, I mean, that in itself must have been such a huge deal for you to say, okay, there's something here, something alive in my womb.
Yeah. The source of that scan, though, wasn't, oh, we're at 12 weeks and it's all good. It was, I'm having a bit of a bleed. Let's go and get checked out. So it might have been about 10 weeks, I'd say. Or sooner than that, I think. And I remember going in and the sonographer, or the gynae guy, just looking in, and he said, oh, yeah, there's the flicker. You've got a heartbeat. Once we've detected a heartbeat, the chances of miscarriage is low. And he gave me the numbers.
And I guess that's what you clung into again.
And then it's like, that's the next thing, the next stat, the next fact, that we've got the heartbeat, even though I'm having these little bleeds, it's looking good.
It seems like, I'm just picturing this in my head, Gurinder, it's like, you know those monkey bars that you're just going through? That's all you were doing, just to get to the
clinging
end.
Clinging on to the next.
Clinging on the next one, the next one, and then till you get to the end to have your child.
Yeah. And then that pregnancy... So after that scan, I said, do you mind just booking me in for another one, just so in a week or so, if the bleeding hasn't stopped, I've got somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, that's fine. Book me in. And my mum and my sister were at my house that time.
Yeah.
And I said to my sister, do you mind just taking me in? You guys can come, because I thought it was going to be fine. And I was like, oh, you can see the heartbeat or whatever. Mm. So I had that bit of excitement. I didn't think anything was going to be wrong. Until I got in and they're scanning me, and it was a junior doctor, and she took forever. And I just thought, does she not know what she's doing?
Yeah.
And again, not an ounce of me was saying there's anything wrong. It was, she's just a bit incompetent at doing the scan. And that's what I held on to. And I just thought, couldn't she just hurry up and call the main guy in who knows what he's doing? And so she did, finally. And then the consultant came around and he was scanning me, and his voice just dropped and he went really quiet and he was saying something, and I couldn't quite like make out, because
your mum and sister were in the room at the same time.
Yeah. So I'm in the curtain and they're the other side of the curtain. And he's saying something, and he's saying, Gurinder, the pregnancy's gone and there's no heartbeat. And again, it's like, okay, I think I just misheard that. And I'm maybe, you know, let me ask him again and clear my ears a bit. And I just couldn't believe it. I thought, what is happening? Like, this is the fourth time now. And he said, it's a missed miscarriage. So we can either wait for nature to take its course and for your body to expel this pregnancy, or you can have a surgery to have it removed. And if you have the surgery, we can do some testing on it, because, you know, this is fourth time now. Maybe there's something underlying that's wrong. And I think my sister and my mum were emotional at that point, but I was very, okay, what do we need to do? Because we need to see if there's something wrong. Yeah. When can I have the surgery?
You're still saying in your head, I want to still have my family.
Yeah, let's get on with it. Let's figure out the problem. Yeah. And I think a part of me kicked into that. Let's just do what needs to be done. Yeah. And this consultant, the very next day, he did my surgery and he said, I'll send everything off for karyotyping and let's see what comes back. And again, there's me thinking there's going to be a problem and we're going to figure it out and next time's going to be different. And the results came back. I had a session with him and he said, everything's normal. Chromosomally, everything is normal. And he said, would you like to know the sex of the baby? Because they tested that. And I was like, yes. Like, for some reason, I just wanted to know. Yeah. My husband didn't, but I did. And they said it would have been a girl. And I was like, oh, just that feeling of a bit more of a connection now with this pregnancy, because I knew it was a girl. And so, yeah, nothing wrong in this pregnancy, in chromosomally, nothing wrong. And then we went on a bit later to have another pregnancy.
So, Gurinder, what was it like to tell your father? Because your father wasn't in that room, was he?
No. I don't know if I told him or if I made somebody else tell him, because I wouldn't have told him. I don't think I had any actual conversation of sharing bad news with my dad, because I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. So I'd chicken out and make anybody else have that conversation. And I think it was that pregnancy, possibly, where mum and dad, dad did come up and they spent some time with me. And again, not much is talked about in this time, but they're there. They know something's going on.
How important was it to have your parents with you?
I think it was just that added layer of, it was a buffer. You know, there's people here. If I'm feeling a bit crappy, they're there. They're just there.
Yeah.
I don't need to have a conversation. I don't need to cry. I don't need to do what I, you know, what I need to. I just know that they're there. And mum's busying around feeding me and doing stuff. So, it was nice. It just felt nice.
You were going to talk about your next.
So we got pregnant again. So we are on number
five
now. And
sorry, Gurinder, I'll ask again. This is your fourth miscarriage now. Where were you mentally at this point? Because you said that you kept going. You said, what's next? But you seem to have hit a point where there was no solution apart from trying.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I might have just been on this autopilot that I'm going to be a mum. I knew I would be a mum. Like, I had that in me. I knew it.
Without
a shadow of a doubt. You know, when you believe something and you know it to be true, I knew that. So I thought, I just need to keep going.
Could you still visualize your family? Did you still have that image in your head of you and your husband and children? Was that still there?
I maybe didn't have the vision of the big family, the 3-4 children that I had when I was younger. But being a mum, having a child with husband, that was there. That vision. I was going to be a mum.
Yeah.
Knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it. And that's part of what kept me going. So how was I coping? I don't know. It was just me and my husband just supporting each other.
This fourth miscarriage, was this a year, like within the same year?
So no, I think that was into year two now.
Year two now, the second year of you trying. So now this fourth miscarriage, you must have had a conversation with your husband to say, do we carry on or do we look at something else? Was that conversation there, or do you just both sort of have a mutual understanding, like that unspoken agreement that you'll just continue to carry on?
No, we did have the conversation.
Yeah.
I can't remember at which stage it was, but we had the conversation, because with the tests all coming back, okay, it was like, there's something not right. Something mustn't be right that I can't hold the pregnancy. So what are our options? And the only thing I could think of was, maybe we could have like surrogacy. Maybe surrogacy is an option. Or adoption or something. But part of me was like, but I can still get pregnant. Yeah. So I don't.
Because there was nothing telling you that you couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought, I can't try those options. It's good to know that they're there.
Yeah.
But I still think I can keep going. And it was just that part of me that, keep going, because this is going to happen. You got it. Keep going. And then we tried again, pregnant again. So I'm really blessed that we got pregnant quickly most of the time.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of people who struggle to even conceive, and imagine then losing a child. And it's just, it made me feel grateful to be able to conceive. And then we conceived again, fifth time. We lost that pregnancy too. I'm actually struggling. So sometimes they merge into one and I forget which order the actual process happened, but I remember getting quite far in that one too, almost 12 weeks, or maybe we were 9-10 weeks in that one, and we lost that one. Sixth pregnancy, we lost that one too. And
did you get to any scans in the fifth and sixth one?
Or? Yeah, I think in a couple of, maybe in both of them, we got to a scan.
Yeah.
But the scans were always something's not feeling right, or I've got a bit of a bleed, so we better go and get checked out. It wasn't that we're at 12 weeks, we've got that, you know, scan, we're going to see the baby. It was never that. It was something's not right.
Yeah.
Let's go and get checked out. And then those times when we'd see the heartbeat, it was like, okay, we still can't get our hopes up because we've had a heartbeat before. And it didn't work out. So, yeah, it was always like just waiting for the next day and seeing what happened, because we were never in a safe zone. We didn't feel like we could ever get to a safe zone. Nothing was safe for us.
When you started to try to have children, were you newlyweds, would you say?
We probably a year and a half. Maybe
and
2 years into
going marriage. Through this whole process of trying to have kids, did it affect your married life at all in any way? Because it brought a lot of grief, it brought a lot of upset into your home.
Yeah.
And to have that sort of grey cloud there, how did you try and still enjoy your life as a married couple?
I think it gets hard because naturally you want to shield yourself away a little bit from the public, from family, from people who might say something that makes you upset, because you're already dealing with that in your home. So for me, I used to make choices that I don't really want to do this, I don't really want to go to that function, or if we do, let's just be there for the time we need to be there and then come home, because you're protecting yourself. So we did do a lot of stuff together. We went on lots of holidays and we found things to do in our safety of the home. And that's, I think, what kept us going. We always had something to look forward to, and we moved house in that time as well. So that was exciting. Yeah. And
so you still tried to sort of get on with your life in some sense.
We did.
Yeah.
As much as we could.
And that probably brought some sanity back into what was going on.
Yeah.
So then after the sixth miscarriage, you tried again.
Yes.
And then what happened there?
So seventh pregnancy, I think I did a few things differently here. Yes. I started Chinese acupuncture ahead of time, so maybe 3 months before conceiving. And I started, we did like a fertility detox, a dietary detox, and we were following all these brilliant recipes to boost our whatever you need to boost. And I felt in a good place. And we got pregnant, and this pregnancy was progressing. And I continued to have acupuncture throughout. And what I really, really liked was this lady doing my acupuncture. It was like every week I'd go and see her, and she was there to like look after me for that 1 hour and to just hear if I said, oh, I've got this little thing going on, and she put a needle in a different place for that. And it was just, it was lovely to have somebody like check on you every week, and to have some time to just relax. And I know that that acupuncture was doing something. I felt really relaxed, and you know, she would tell me things by looking at my pulse and saying, this is what I'm feeling. Yeah. And it just felt reassuring that somebody's, you know, caring for me. I think it made a big difference because my pregnancy progressed, and we got to the 12-week point.
Without having to worry about anything? Or did you still?
I maybe had like bits of spotting.
Yeah.
But I'd have scans regularly because I was at the recurrent miscarriage clinic. Okay. So
they were always checking on you
again.
Anyway.
I felt a bit cared for.
Yeah.
But then, so this pregnancy is progressing. I got to the 12-week stage, and just as we got there, I lost my dad.
Take your time going there.
And you already sense the relationship I have with him.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it. I thought, I have got, I'm the most pregnant I've ever been. And I've just had news that my dad has died suddenly. He was on holiday at the time. And I don't even know what to say. It was just the biggest shock of my life.
So you had happiness at your doorstep, but with it came a sadness as well.
Yeah.
Where was your father when he passed away?
He was on holiday. He was in India.
He was in India.
With my mum. He was actually visiting his mum because she wasn't very well.
Right.
She's fine. She's still fine. And they were doing some wedding shopping because my little youngest sister was getting married just a few months after that.
Wow. So there was a lot going on.
A lot going on.
Pregnancy, a wedding. Yeah.
My other sister was also pregnant and expecting any second, any minute.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And your father generally was well?
He'd had two heart attacks in the past.
Yeah.
But there was nothing to indicate that he wasn't good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it came as a real shock. It was just a couple of days before he was due to come home anyway. And we were so excited. We were ready for him to come home. I was ready for him to come home because I had news to share with him.
Yeah.
I hadn't told him while he was on holiday that I was pregnant. And I was at 12 weeks.
So when you were going through these pregnancies, you were just waiting till at least 12 weeks to tell people.
Yeah.
And so your dad passed away without knowing that you were pregnant and that you had reached a 12-week stage.
I feel like because we were so connected, I feel like he sensed it.
Yeah.
Because he was buying some things for us for my sister's wedding while in India. I remember him asking me which size suit he should get for me. And I said, oh, can you get it unstitched? Can you just bring it to this country unstitched?
Yeah.
Because, you know, who knows what might happen in that time? Like, we've still got a few months. And and he didn't know because I told him, but I think he knew because he knew me.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I think he sensed it.
So you had this news come to you, but your pregnancy continued. And this pregnancy, correct me if I'm wrong, but this went on further and even got to the final stages.
We got to 5 months in this pregnancy and we went to the 20-week scan.
Yeah.
The scan was actually about 21 weeks and we had the scan and everything was fine. So sonographer saying, you know, heart chambers are good, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fingers and toes.
So you can now even see like the organs developing.
We're told everything is as expected.
Wow.
And at that point, I remember we had to have a chat with ourselves, me and my husband, because up to then we hadn't really built hopes or dreams or anything. No, we had hope, but we didn't have the dream. We didn't have the picture because we didn't know when was safe for us. And we had this chat and we were like, oh my God, it's like happening. Let's get my notebook out and let's start making lists of things that we need and which room would be the baby's room. And we literally had just started having those conversations and we just got the notebook out and we were, you know, writing all this stuff in it. And just a few days after that, I remember having a bit of a bleed, and I was actually messaging my cousin at the time and she said, do you think you should just go and get checked out? Because I thought, I've just had the scan, I'm all right. Like, this bleed is nothing.
Was it a heavy bleed? Or
No, just a little bit of spotting. And I thought, I've experienced a lot worse than this. I'm sure this is fine. And because my cousin had put that little seed in my head, I thought I better go and get checked out. So we went to the hospital, we got checked out, and they could hear the heartbeat and everything. They said, everything's okay, your cervix is closed, you're okay. And this, it was a weekend, I think, so there was a delay in getting a sonographer to actually scan me. And they said, you can wait and we can admit you if you like, or you can go home, and if you have any issues, you can come back. And because they'd heard the heartbeat, and because we'd heard it and we were told everything seemed okay, we thought, let's just go home.
Yeah.
I'd rather be asleep in my own bed. Went home and didn't really think much of that. We just thought, okay, we're okay.
Yeah.
Carried on with our lists.
Next monkey bar.
Yeah. It was like, just let's do this. Yeah. It's happening. But literally 24 hours later, I remember I thought, I need to go to the toilet. And I'm going to say this because I've heard a lot of people talk about this since.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I needed a poo.
Okay.
And I felt like I needed to, you know, push. And I just thought, something's not right.
Wait, were you in going into labour?
I was going into labour.
Wow.
But I just thought...
The only reason I picked it up is because I'm a doctor, so I know that that is a sign of...
I just thought I needed the toilet. And I've heard of a number of people since who've had late miscarriages also have that same sensation of, I just need to go to the toilet, and then have gone on to...
So you were at home at this point?
I was at home.
And you just felt, I need to just go to the bathroom?
Yeah. And I remember, as I was just sat on the toilet, I felt the pain.
Yeah.
And I just thought, are these contractions? Because this is like excruciating. And
was your husband with you?
Yeah, he was just in the kitchen. He was just making dinner. So things was
normal,
a nice day.
I'd
rested that day based on the day before. And I somehow reached for my phone and I thought, let me see how much time there is between these pains I'm getting. And I think they were 2 minutes apart.
Wow.
And I said, I think these are contractions. And I was kind of saying to him, looking to him to reassure me, to say, yes, these are contractions, let's get into hospital. But what would he know?
Yeah.
And I said, just phone the hospital, get our notes, and I think we need to go now. So we got in the car somehow, because I'm having contractions all the time. And we got in the car. We somehow got to the hospital. And as we got in, there was a consultant who was familiar to me, the one who did my surgery previously with the missed miscarriage. And he was the one to take us into the hospital. And he checked me out and he said, Gurinder, you are 9 centimetres and you're going to have the baby. And what's going on? Everything was okay yesterday. And next thing I know, my waters broke then.
Yeah.
And I'm being wheeled into the maternity section, straight into the bereavement suite. And there's midwives there all waiting to deliver my baby.